Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson, I beat you last week. I beat you by 4 seconds, and this time I extended it to 7 seconds.
Wow. That's noted.
Yeah.
That's something. Welcome to Cloudlandia, where
Thank
all the planes fly
much.
On time. Yes.
Well, the planes fly when you want them to.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I've been metaversing the past week in addition to my day job, you know, which is,
okay.
So we started a new quarter and I got off to a really good start on Thursday and Friday. And, you know, it's a nervous time for me because, you know, it's mostly new what I create every quarter. And with the exception of the moving future, I do brand new stuff every quarter. So I'm always nervous because this is a topic worth discussing. I never feel that I can be more than 50% prepared when I create something new, because the other 50% is provided
how people respond
by the entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
How do they take it in? How do they think about it? What do they do with it? You know. So
I've noticed that I feel for a long time, you know, as being in group number one of the 10 times program, I felt like we were on the cutting edge because everything new, first exposure to it was group one, 10 times. And I was seeing things like virgin snow every time, but it's gotten to where now since the free zone and bundling the 10 times to coincide with that we're having to wait a little bit for the
I think you're getting a more worked out model, you know, and it has to do, I mean, it has to do because you know, it's just the timing when we did we gave two opportunities for the free zone. You could do it in September, like this quarter as an example. You can do it in September, or you can do it in October. And probably during the next year, we'll introduce a third date in each quarter that you can do it. And then the other thing is that when we go back to in-person workshops sometime in the future, there'll be two of them, and then there'll be a virtual third one that for those who, and the virtual third one will be after the two in-person ones. So it'll be those who, for some reason, could not set aside the time for the travel. They do it, and maybe some people will do two of them. You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know. You know, you never know what check writers are going to do.
You never know. So I'm interested then to hear. We started a little conversation towards the end of the last call about the metaverse, and because a new word that I've been doing some myself too, and the kind of linking word that goes along with it is spatial reality, is what they're calling the whole thing. And now you're starting to see all the opportunities that are unfolding there. Ray-Ban just introduced the new Facebook glasses that will record video and photos, you know, using voice commands right attached to your, they just look like regular glasses. And that's an interesting thing. But I'd love to hear what did you find in your
first of all, that parts of what are being talked about have been from my experience anyway of attending Abundance 360 and just following up on things that it's been something that's been talked about really going back to almost the turn of the 21st century, because first of all, I would say that wherever civilians think they are with this, the military is probably 10 years ahead
Right. And
I have a number of strategic coach clients who had extensive experience as special forces.
So, okay. You know,
that would include the Army Green Berets, the Navy SEALs, the Delta Force, and the Marine Corps have a version of that. And these are just really people who like doing scary things, like breaking things, and like, you know, and are not adverse.
And inventing impossible. Yeah. I mean, DARPA is a great example of, when you couple a positive attitude with an unlimited budget.
Yeah. So for example, I've got one who was an instructor, other country's special forces. So he was in the American Special Forces, and then he spent 15 years as an instructor in Middle East countries. And whatever may be true about people's armies and military in general, when you get to the special forces level, they're really top-notch troops. You know, Canada has really top-notch special forces, you know. And I think the world is going more and more in this direction, because the notion that we're going to have wide open, you know, mass scale military conflicts on the mainland is probably a thing of the past. You know, it just won't happen. I think maybe Desert Storm would have been the last one we had, where, you know, the Iraqis had tanks and, you know, they had big tank corps and everything else, and the artillery, all their ability to use most of their resources was gone in the first 6 hours when the U.S. just destroyed all their communication networks. You know, they just went in and destroyed all their electronics. Their planes couldn't fly. They couldn't stay in touch with each other. And I think that was the last battle of this sort. I don't think it's like you'll never see a sea battle again, you know, like warships against warships.
Right. Well, things evolve, right? I mean,
things evolve.
You know, that reminds me of, that reminds me of the presidential debates with Obama and Romney. Yeah, and Romney was, you know, saying to Obama that, you know, the military needs updating that they're declining, and that there are fewer ships in the military than there were in 1914. And Obama, without skipping a beat, said, "That's true, but there's also less horses and bayonets." And he said, "Things evolve, and there's actually these things called aircraft carriers now, where they can land the planes right on the ships and fly from there." It was just so funny that the fact that you're judging the current state of the Navy by the number of ships, it's like so. We move into the Cloudlandia army is very different.
Yeah, well, you know? I think Romney kind of took the last cassette tape version of preparing yourself for the presidency.
Right.
you know, he did sleep. He did sleep learning. You know, he had
the cassette course on that. Yeah, exactly.
And
Nightingale Conant, how to prepare for presidency.
And so what I think, you know, and Peter Zion, who I really follow his thinking on this matter, he says basically, as far as a country like the U.S., it's going to come down to drones, automated drones, you know, which are basically guided by satellites. And it's going to be special forces. In other words, there will be crucial situations where you send in a team that's in and out in 4 or 5 hours. Maybe they're in and out in 60 minutes. But it's just a crucial juncture. And then the drones just keep everybody's heads down, you know, like, you know, yeah. And so what I'm saying is that I think that parts of what people are gathering to create the concept of the metaverse. First of all, I'm just going on the basis from my reading that it's a concept, and it's actually there's practicality to it because people already have the experience virtual reality, which is actually virtual simulation. I went on, they had examples, they had, I think, 6 different commercial applications of virtual reality at Abundance 360 that you could use with Oculus. You'd have Oculus and you would go in and do it. And I walked around and one of them was real estate and they were showing off a new house and everything else. And I was out of there in 4 minutes. I said, this is just incredibly boring. You know, first of all, it took me about 20 minutes to get ready, you know, and
getting your head, you're all adjusted and
And so I'm just responding personally that where they are right now, I have not very much interest in. But I do know that in various industries, various situations, it's being deeply applied and it's working. It's working. And it's one of these things that it comes back to conversations we've had ever since the beginning of COVID, that Zoom is an amazing, amazing medium for people who have a purpose to use it.
Yes, that's true.
And I think Cloudlandia in all of its aspects is incredibly useful, but it's only specifically useful for your specific purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a and state
so
of mind.
I'm not sure that there's a seismic change sometime in the future. I think it's just a constantly set of accumulating experiences of people who have different purposes for using the digital world. The one thing that seems to have been the biggest topic of discussion over the last 2 or 3 months is Mark Zuckerberg saying, you know, Facebook will become the metaverse. And, my sense is, you know, and I'm ignorant here because I've never used Facebook except Facebook Live. Facebook Live is only part of it I've used, and I've used it because you can get out to, you know, it's like an
But honestly, that your use, when you say you've used Facebook, is what that really means is you sat in front of your computer looking at the screen just like you would do if you were on Zoom. And it happened to be being broadcast through Facebook. But the function of what you were doing was no different than using Zoom or using any other video platform. Yeah. So your function of it is the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the question I have for you, because I suspect that you've been involved in the Facebook world more than I have. But my sense is, have they improved in any way? Has Facebook improved in any way over the last, let's say, 5 years, except being a really, really, really useful advertising platform?
It is that, a really, really useful advertising platform. And I don't think that people truly understand how really useful it is. That is the absolute truth. I've been less involved in the actual like functionality of it. And even that, I'm not that involved in, I'm not, you know, pushing knobs and buttons to make anything happen. Even on the advertising front, I have a who that I compose the ads in my Remarkable and I can send them right from the Remarkable to him. So I draw out what we're looking for. And, you know, it's really, there's something as an aside, there's something really interesting because this may lead to, another use for this, but I've been reading a book called Alchemy by Rory Sutherland, who's the guy who is the head of Ogilvy advertising. He's David Ogilvy's partner. He runs Ogilvy advertising. And one of the things that he said is sometimes the opposite of a good idea can be a good idea. And it was really what he found was interesting was that they had a client who was sending letters to introduce a new product to their customers, and they would continue to make the letter longer and more detailed, and it became kind of unwieldy, a little big, but it was selling well. And his idea was that he's got a sensible product that's relatively inexpensive, selling it to people who already know us. And he thought we could do essentially like a 9-word email, like, you know, a short letter selling this product, and that would work equally as well. And they did, and it actually worked better. And yeah. His thought was that both ends of the spectrum were reassuring. It was reassuring that the long letter was reassuring because all the details were there written out. But the short letter was equally reassuring because it felt like, oh, they're not trying to sell me on this. This is a no-brainer, right? It's just that, and that's something that I've used for, you know, so, you know, such a neat thing is sometimes just saying, just letting people know what it is and doing it is a win. So,
yeah, well, you know, it goes along with, you know, that I think that your fundamental underlying technology, you know, that if you just look back to the last 150 years, the underlying technology was up until 1970. So let's say the 1870 to 1970, yeah. 100 years, was the assembly line, you know, like basically more and more that large scale work with mass manufacturing, mass production, mass marketing, mass distribution. It all followed the assembly line, you know, that added thousands of workers would each do one activity. And, you know, 50 different activities would be put together in a process. And that's all that was required to create a uniform product with minimum defects. And it actually started in the meat processing family. Henry Ford, who's famous for introducing, you know, the assembly line into automaking. Mm-hmm. But he actually learned it by going to Chicago and watch the hunt, the meat, you know, meat processing, hunt bacon, ketchup. They make ketchup and everything like it. But the big thing was the processing of pigs in the stockyards of Chicago. And it was such a big thing that they actually had stadium stands for people to go there as entertainment to watch the pigs being killed and then turned into a can of meat at the end of the day.
And
they could go through 50,000, you know, 50,000 pigs come in on one end and all these cans of meat go out on the other side. And then Henry Ford, you know, said, you know, there's 1,500 car companies, but they each are handcrafting, you know, they're each handcrafting a car.
Yeah.
And he said, we could really get ahead of the game if we could speed up, you know, we could multiply the production by a factor of 10, which they did. And then, you know, I mean, just to push it further, Motown, Gordy, what's his name? The guy who started Motown, Gordy, can't think of his last name.
Barry Gordy.
Yeah. Well, he worked in one of the big automakers. He worked, I don't know, Ford or Chrysler or GM.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, really?
And he was thinking, you know, talent is a handcrafted, you know, the recording industry is a handcrafted industry. And I bet we can really speed it up if we just process talent groups. And that we just have a way, they have to learn how to walk on stage, they have to learn how to dress, they have to learn how to do makeup, and they have to learn how to harmonize, and you know,
yes.
and we'll just start pumping out these groups, and they did, you know, the
Hit Factory, yeah,
the hit Factory. And he said the other thing is that blacks have been entertaining blacks forever. He says what we need is blacks who entertain whites, and they get on the top 10 hit. And there's this thing called the top 10 chart every week right across the United States. And my goal is to get 7 of our groups on the top 10 every week. And that was,
wow.
But it's pure manufacturing, you know, it's
yeah.
Mass manufacturing, mass production, mass marketing, and mass distribution.
I love it.
But and then, that sort of reached its hit, you know, in the 60s and 70s. And then the microchip comes in, and all of a sudden we're shifting over from an assembly line basis right at the very core of economy. And the educational system was geared into that, and, you know, culture was geared into that. And then all of a sudden, you go in another direction around 1970, and I think we're at the end of 50 years right now, uh-huh. where you're going now to it's going in the other direction. It's miniaturization. Okay. And
yeah.
but it's binary. It's either one or zero. I mean, the basic digital code, it's, you know, you can convert uh-huh. everything either to a one or a zero. And, uh-huh. what you just said leading into this was that a really, really long letter will work and a 9-letter message will work, but probably yeah. nothing in between. It's binary.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting, right? It's either you're saying I think that the ends of it are that, because I've said, and this is where the insight came for me, is that I've clued into this idea between compelling and convincing.
Yeah.
That you can compel with short words.
That's
exactly right. Yes, you can't convince with a lot with short words.
Yeah.
So it depends whether you have to compel or convince, right? And
well,
compelling
it's really
wins.
Ben Hardy, who I have the collaboration to turn out best-selling books every year, and he's just a great writer. But he went from a dead start to the number one writer on Medium in 3 years because he analyzed that Google basically rewards writers, in other words, the Medium writers, because Google owns Medium. They reward the writers for the length of time they can keep the readers involved.
Uh-huh. on the site, right.
And you can't, and the 2,500 word blog that keeps them there for 25 minutes is much superior to a 300 word blog.
Yes. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And
coach, we've gone back. I said, look, you got a fundamental choice as an entrepreneur. Do you want to compete with Walmart in those days? Do you want to compete with Walmart? Okay. And is that who you're competing with is Walmart?
Right.
Yeah. Nobody says, no, we don't have to do that. Then you've got to have a unique niche process. You got to have a unique niche process, and you're just going for a very, very small number of people. You're either going for the world, or you're going for a very small number of highly specific, highly qualified individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. We did this thing, target market, and mm-hmm. you know, and so we were writing the last book with Ben, and it's Gap in the Gain, and it comes out mm-hmm. in October. So Ben was saying, you know, everybody needs to read this. I said, but we don't need to write the book for everybody. We just need to find one person who would be the ideal reader.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be the ideal reader? And I said, And he says, because the gap in the gain is to show high achievers how to be happy with their achievement. That's the sole purpose of the goal. That so many high achievers are admired and respected on the outside, and they don't feel any of it on the inside. They don't feel happy at all with their achievement. Because they were too busy learning to achieve, they missed all the classes on being happy.
Yes, that's true.
And so he says, well, who's the target reader? And I says, well, it's Tucker Max.
Mm-hmm.
I said, as far as I know, he arrived as an achiever. He knew how to achieve. He knew how to achieve things. He knew how to put things together. He knew how to get from A to B. He had 4 best-selling books before he was 30 years old. He had a Hollywood film made on one of them. He just missed all the classes. And we sent this off to Eckhart. He came back and he said, this is so true. He says, you can't imagine how true this is. So my feeling, when you're writing the book, you only write the book for one person.
Yes. That's my principle number one. Select a single target market is profit activator number one. And that's it's very interesting that the distinction is that I have to make with people, Dan, is that people are often trying to position themselves so that they can be selected. And I'm saying that profit activator number one is turning that into you're the one doing the selecting. Select a single target market, not hope, make yourself cast as wide a net as possible so that more possible people could select you. It's like you talk about always be the buyer, right? Set things up that you're choosing them. That's your audience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can do this in the new binary world. Like I'm saying that in 2021, where we are right now, we're 50 years since we started leaving the assembly line world. And we're now into this pinpoint world where you can really, really target with the world, And it was funny because we've sold now about probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 160,000 Who Not How, thanks to Dean Jackson's inspiration.
Wow.
And Mr. Jackson, and our sales, direct sales, where people have read the book, called us, and started a conversation, signed up for the program, is around 220 individuals.
That's so great, Dan.
Oh, it is. I mean,
Who not how?
So anyway, I had a 10X workshop, and one guy said, you've got 160,000 people who bought the book. And I said, yes. He said, and you've only got 200. Well, it wasn't that. It was when we were at like 130 and we had 150 people signed up. And he says, and you've only gotten 150 sales out of it. And I
said, oh my goodness.
Yeah. And he said, well, if you just went active with this and you went after the 150,000, if you went after the 150,000, your sales would be so many bigger. He's a marketing guy. He's a marketing guy who hasn't met Dean Jackson. Anyway, I said, no. I said, if that was our goal, you would be right. But our goal was that we do absolutely nothing until they identify themselves, the prospect, and make the decision and take the effort to phone us and say,
yes,
I'm really fascinated with this. How do I sign up for your program? I said,
yes,
that's the goal. That's the goal.
That's profit activator too, Dan. Compel.
We do absolutely compel no work.
Right.
We do absolutely no.
Compel your prospects to call you.
Yes. And the right prospect.
Yes. Well, because you've selected them in Profit Activator 1. You've been unconsciously unconsciously competent in 68 profit activities. Select your single target market. Compel them to call you. Yes.
Yeah.
So. That's so great.
But it's really interesting. Now, here's my question with you is that you as Dean Jackson with your, you know, with the breakthrough blueprint and the VCR added to that now. And, you know, strategic coach with our, you know, with our buildup of tools and our thing. I don't really care what happens in Cloudlandia. I give a feeling that new tools are being created so that the next stage of my growth, there will be new tools that will accommodate our future expansion. And I don't have to worry really what's going on in Cloudlandia. It's being created. And the vast majority of it isn't really useful for my purposes, but a lot of really great new things are being created for my purposes. And I have to be very, very clear about my purposes.
Right. Yes, I get it 100% that you've got to have the wisdom to see whether this fits your agenda or how this is going to be useful to you and not worry if it's not think about it otherwise.
Yeah, I use an analogy. I say it's like a very selective grizzly bear who's got his own salmon.
Oh, that's so funny. Got his own salmon run. Yeah.
Driving, and the grizzly said, no. Yep. There's one.
Come to Papa.
Can you just flip it? He said, I'll just flip it on the shore. He said, I'll go back and eat it later.
That is so funny, Dan.
No, but we're taking advantage of other compelling forces in the world.
Yes.
And all you have to do is be clearer, you know, and I try to do it on a quarterly basis. You know, I do measurement every 3 months that I'm a little bit smarter about what I'm not going to waste my time on over the next 3 months that I wasted my time on during the last 3 months.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about that salmon run, you know, that it's sort of swimming against the current, that they have to put some effort into being, you know, going forward there. I was reading about James Cook. Was it Captain Cook who took the British to Australia?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that when the big thing to be concerned about was scurvy then, and they knew that that was the biggest threat. And the antidote, the thing that would solve it, was apparently, horseradish. Limes, but what is the thing that it's like a pickled salad kind of thing that people make? I'm thinking it's
sauerkraut. Are you talking about sauerkraut?
Sauerkraut, yes, like sauerkraut.
The fermentation and the probiotic is a big thing.
There we go. Yes, and that saved off scurvy. But nobody wanted to eat it. Nobody, it was unpalatable and nobody liked it. And so what they did, Dan, was that they brought all of the sauerkraut on the boat. But in the beginning, they would only serve it to officers. They only served the sauerkraut to officers. It was a privilege of being an officer. And then before long, people started sneaking this forbidden fruit from the officers and then started demanding it. And everybody wanted the forbidden fruit. And nobody died of scurvy on the journey to Australia.
Yeah.
It's very interesting how something about we're wired to want something when it appears that they don't want us to have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's amazing.
One of the things working with Peter Diamant is we got real clear about in the first 2 or 3 years, like we named it a 360, And the 360 was that it was going to be a complete review of technology for the previous 365 days, you know. And 360 had more usefulness than 365, so we just said 360. And then we got to the point. 360
degree.
Uh-huh. Yeah, 360 degrees. And then, you know, the year's got 365 days, so.
Yes.
You know, and so you can kind of cover both meanings with the one number, whereas 365 doesn't cover both numbers.
I got you right.
And both ideas. And anyway, we got to the point where we were going over 360, and, you know, there was a discussion. Well, should we raise it? And I said, no, don't raise it. And I said,
raise the price.
Well, they did. We raised the price, but I said, you know, we're learning the fundamental lesson here. There's nothing that sells abundance like scarcity.
Right. Nothing sells abundance like scarcity. That'll be the headline.
Only the officers get sauerkraut.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's
you just have general quarters, and you say, I just want to tell you, we've got rumors that some of the men on the ship are stealing, sneaking portions of sauerkraut, where we made it very, very clear at the beginning of this voyage that it's only for the officers, because they're the ones that we have to keep healthy in the entire over the entire trip.
Oh my goodness, Dan. I mean, it's so amazing, isn't it? Our brains, you cannot digitize that. That's where the thing about the people are gonna thrive in Cloudlandia have a real understanding that the base, you know, thing that we're dealing with is the.
You know what? I had an example yesterday that I think it connects to what we're talking about here. So it's 9/11 day, you know, and there's a commemoration all over the United States for 9/11. Okay. And I just saw a little article on one of my news sites. And it was of the changing of the guard in front of Buckingham Palace yesterday. The Queen's, it's the Welsh guards who in the red coats and the big black, fur hats. So they were changing from one shift to the other. And then they play, you know, they've got a band with them, and then they play, you know, and so it, they went to play, and what they played was the Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah. Wow.
And I said, wow, how to send a very, very powerful message in a very short period of time.
Right.
That here it is, the Queen's, you know, the monarchy of England, because the Buckingham Palace is hers, and that's what the changing of the guard all is about. And on 9/11, they play I don't know if they played God Save the Queen, but they played the American National Anthem. But the interesting thing is where the words of the National Anthem were thought up overnight in 1814 by Francis Scott Key, you know, sort of a writer, poet, when the British were bombarding Baltimore. So the say, can you see, you know, and everything else. That's about the bombardment of the British Navy of an American port. So there's a double meaning to it. First of all, they're playing the country that fought a war against them and broke free. But basically the music itself and the particular anthem that's being played is about the British bombarding this country. And so, and it just had all sorts of meaning to me when I did it. And I sent a note out to our British team and I said, class act, Brits do it fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is.
But it's just a nice gesture, you know.
But you know what? That goes down to the fact that supports exactly what I was just saying, that at the bottom line of it is we are biological, you know, and that's emotion and fear. That's what's really making the decisions. We're much more emotional than rational from a, you know, making decisions basis. And it's like, you know, Sting had a song with the police in the 80s called "I Hope the Russians Love Their Children Too." That's kind of an interesting thing because it was the heat of the Cold War, the height of the Cold War. And that was his song that was that you can't imagine, you know, that's really what's going to stop it is that the Russians love their children too. And that we all have that in common. And I think that there's some really, no matter what, you know, changes as we all kind of become more equal in Cloudlandia, this is what's going to make the difference. I mentioned, Dan, you mentioned 9/11, and I was talking with Philip about 9/11 yesterday and sharing with him. He asked me, you know, where were you when 9/11 happened? And I remember it so clearly. And it's really a pretty interesting, you know, time frame now to look at it, that 20 years exactly, how much you talk about the gap in the game right now, that how much we've changed in those 20 years. I was playing golf. It was a Tuesday morning, of course. I was playing golf. I was in Canada and I was playing golf with a couple of friends. And back then I had one of those Nokia phones. There was no smartphones. No, wasn't even on the, in use that, yet.
Those are the days when you needed a caddy for your phone.
Right. Exactly. Excuse me. No, the phones were nice. They were getting small now. There's those Nokia really small phones in 2021 or in 2000. Yeah. And we played golf all morning and then we drove home. We were having lunch at Mike's out in his backyard. We're sitting on the patio. We're having a great lunch. And then Joanne, his wife, walks in about 1 o'clock in the afternoon and says, "Isn't it terrible what's happening?" And we're like, "Well, what's happening?" And she told us the whole story. We had missed the whole morning. Mm-hmm. And then we sat there, we turned on the TV and watched, you know, all of the stuff that had unfolded over the morning while we're blissfully unaware on the golf course. And until 1 o'clock.
Well, I'm surprised. Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't encounter anyone in the clubhouse area or something.
No, isn't that something like we literally.
You must have gone right from the course to your car.
We did. We did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's something like.
Interesting. It was up in your area, up in the upper northwest area. You were up in your.
I was in Georgetown. Mm hmm. Yeah.
Georgetown. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. You know, there's this famous play, Away Again. I think it's Away Again. And it's about all the transatlantic flights that had to land in Gander, Newfoundland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And come from away. Yeah.
Come from away. And the entire community had to pitch in and provide lodging for everybody. It's about that. And it's a big deal, you know, for that small community.
Yeah.
But the bigger one was actually Toronto International, because all the flights that were coming from around the world into the U.S. were, you know, rerouted. And everything that came from the east went into Toronto. And people in Mississauga, especially, and these were, you know, personal homeowners, and that they put up about 30,000 Americans over a day, two or three days before it started to sort itself out. And that's right. You know, I mean, it was happening right where you were. There had just been nonstop of flights coming into Pearson. Yeah. I had just the opposite. I had just the opposite experience. We were in Chicago doing workshops. So we had two workshops that day together. Mm-hmm. The other coach and I had 100. We had 100, mostly U.S., almost invariably. And so we got in, Babs and I drove in, and it was an earlier hour. So we were an hour behind. So this was around 8 o'clock. So we got in at 8 o'clock Chicago time, 9 o'clock, and it had already happened in New York, before this. And I walked in, and our team had put a television at the concierge desk. And everybody's crowded around, and I said, what's going on? Well, they said the jets have flown into New York City. And I said, you get that TV out of there and get it out of there. We've got workshops to run.
And, right.
I said, what are you doing? Get the TV out of here, and don't turn it on again. And I don't want you watching it. We're going to be really busy today. So anyway, then we met, and I says, look, we've got one thing to do. We have to get people to make a decision in the first 5 minutes of the workshop. Are they here for the day or are they gone for the day?
Okay. Right.
And everybody that wants to get out of here, it's our job for the next 4 or 5 hours just to take each person and see if we can get them transportation, see if we can get them lodging, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's the game for today. I said, we know how to do the workshop. Everybody who stays will know how to do the workshop. So that's not the issue today. But there's going to be a lot of people who want to leave. And it turned out to be about 30% stayed, out of the 100. So we had to handle 70 people. And we had it all handled by 1 o'clock. So there was that.
Yeah.
But when I walked in the room, I said, okay. I'm old enough to know the story of Pearl Harbor, and because I talked to my mother about Pearl Harbor, and I said, what we're having today is a Pearl Harbor situation. Okay. And so I think this is a game changer that we're experiencing today. So the thing that you have to decide is whether you're going to be 100% on your way back home right now, or you're going to be 100% here for the next 8 hours. But you can't be in between these two things. So if you're leaving, let's get that started right now. If you're staying, then don't be going back and forth between what's back at home, but use the day to prepare yourself, because probably this is the last day you're going to be able to just focus on yourself, because for the next 90 days, you're probably going to have to be incredibly useful to a lot of other people. And it worked out well, it worked out well. But it wasn't until about 9 o'clock that night, because I had a discussion group, Chicago book discussion group that we had at 6 o'clock. So I never saw any of the videos until about 9 o'clock that night when I got home.
And
they had censored them by then, they didn't show people jumping.
Right.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
But you think in telling about that, I was having to describe that there's no iPhone, there was no Twitter, you think about what would be activated if that were to happen today. And you look at that, half the companies that we would count on for this, right? After the tools, there was no Facebook, there's no Twitter, there's no Instagram, there's no YouTube, there's no smartphones. You didn't have the ability to take video and post it and share everything there. Amazon is just getting started. Apple is just kind of turning the corner, right? They had just launched the iPod and the new MacBooks. But that's really... That was the state of where we were.
The interesting thing, and there was a really good article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, and the Wall Street Journal, their entire offices were right across the street from the North Tower of the World Trade Center. So their entire company was destroyed when the you know, because the buildings around the World Trade Center were just, you know, all the glass was broken, you know, like
right.
beams shot through, you know, when the tower came down, it started sending projectiles out for a quarter of a mile, you know, beams. And so no one was killed in the Wall Street Journal because they vacated the moment the first jet hit. But they were telling the story because they produced a full edition the next day. And what it took to reassemble the staff at apartments and, you know, around the city and everything else. And everybody was doing their job and getting it together. But one of the things why I like this article, they said, you know, in Afghanistan, you know, what happened in Afghanistan with Osama, looks like we've made no progress against this. But he said, the number one project over the last 20 years, as far as the U.S. is concerned, is no more attacks in the U.S. And they were just saying that only 107 people have died in the last 20 years, you know, of situations where they can call it, you know, terrorism home front, somebody else, you know, creating terrorism.
What was it in the 20 years from 1981 to 2001?
Yeah, don't know the answer. Don't know the answer to that.
I was thinking about
that. But it was 3,000. It was 3,000 on that day.
You know? Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And,
I was thinking about what's all happened in, you know, since then. Like the things that we can't even imagine now, a world without smartphones and the big five, you know, yeah.
Yeah, but one of the things that the article was saying is that it's much harder to be a successful terrorist these days.
Right.
They said that, first of all, they can't use telephone, that they can't use any kind of telephone equipment whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And
they still have to operate like it's 1999, right?
Yeah. And not only that, but they, you know, the satellite coverage is 1,000 times greater. They're being watched, and they never know when a drone is overhead and is watching them, and, you know, everything else. So, you know, it's like a virus, antivirus, you know, I mean, it's sort of, yeah, new virus, now we got new antivirus. So, yeah, a tricky new virus, yeah, we got another antivirus for that. So my sense is that on the one hand, they've been good for the fiction world. Terrorism's been really good for the fiction world.
Yeah. Now it's exciting to think, like, you know, I was thinking about your operating model, that you're embracing the things that are serving you in Cloudlandia, but you're roundly rejecting the things that are potentially derailing to you, in that you are living.
I would say distracting, that they would be distracting to me. Yeah.
Yes.
And my feeling is that if we compared cards, you and I, we've both taken the same approach to this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of the salmon aren't big enough.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
And I think that's the point, that I think that, you know, that focus and strategic and specific and I'm the buyer are the rules for operating in Cloudlandia that mm-hmm. really didn't work that well in the mainland.
Right. Not like they are. I mean, I'm really refining my whatsmanship now, you know, in terms of my remarkable tablet. I'll have to show you and maybe we can discuss my mechanisms now for my collaboration with my who's that I've got my remarkable. I have a little, I can send, a document. I could send an impact filter, basically a fast mm-hmm. filter or whatever directive that I want to my who's, and have that done. And I'm really ramping up as little as I do now. What I'm really looking to do is to do even less and really only do. No, and I mean that the things I still run into friction, right? That
yeah.
I'm still, because I have the skills to do some of these things, I end up doing some of it. And I'm really realizing now that there's no need. That's going to be the key, is that I literally just get better at dispersing it to the who's pushing the magic button and knowing that it's done. So I can see it.
I can see it now, Dean. You're kind of like Elmer Fudd. Remember Elmer mm-hmm. Fudd?
Yes.
Oh, frustrating friction.
That's exactly right. Oh,
this frustrating friction.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. Ooh, that makes me so frustrated.
So frustrated. That's exactly right. This is so, but I've had a really great week of breakthrough in my collaborations. And I'm super encouraged by that.
Yeah.
Next
10 times I have the 8 ground rules for free zone collaborations.
And I like so, it.
I really tested these out, and you know, they're it's like a stack, you know, the notion of a stack, that if you put these 8 yep. things together, you can almost guarantee that it's going to be pre-zone. You can almost guarantee that it's going to be a good collaboration. So
yeah,
anyway, perfect. that'll be pre-zone this time. I'm introducing that. Yeah.
I like it. Well,
yeah. Is that compelling or convincing? I am convinced.
I'm compelled.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll have a lot to add to it. I mean, we'll all have a lot to add to it. You know, mm-hmm. just giving. This is my 50%.
Well, number one, I'm going to be a practitioner of it. That's where the biggest learning is going to come for me.
Yeah.
Pioneering the way.
You bet.
All right, Dan. Well, are we on for next?
Well, I'm on for next week. I'm on for
me
next
too,
week.
Me too. Good.
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
I love
okay,
it.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks.